Vodka O'Clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love from AmberUnmasked.com and you are listening to Vodka O'Clock. Remember that you can sponsor the show and the website by going to patreon.com/AmberUnmasked to pledge as little as a dollar per creation, which basically means a dollar per week. And joining me today, I am so glad to welcome back to the show, Josh Neff. Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me back.
So we are going to have, I hope, a lot of fun today. We're recording on Easter, so even though like weeks later, so it's perfect brunch vodka time.
Yes.
So I am drinking some vanilla vodka, and it's in orange juice. So premium stuff, though, Van Gogh vodka in the Simply Orange orange juice.
That's a
top shelf. Top
wonderful
shelf for
combination.
Me.
Vanilla vodka is good.
Mm. It is indeed. I thought about making more coffee and then throwing something in there, but instead I went for the orange juice because we were talking about how we would have a nice brunch Skyping. So I was like, that has to be juice related. So what are you having?
It's only a quarter after 11 my time. So I'm just drinking some sparkling lemon lime seltzer water.
Sounds fancy.
Although, if our friend Andy Parks were here, he'd probably give me something stronger regardless of the time of day.
It's true. That's what, you know, when people pick on me about what I'm having at whatever time, I don't really adhere to that. I base it off of how long I've been awake.
Nice.
And I've been awake, like, since really stupid o'clock for a Sunday morning. So I figure it's vodka o'clock time. It was vodka o'clock time like an hour ago as far as I was concerned,
yes.
But I saved it for this.
We could say it's always vodka o'clock somewhere in the world.
That's true. But yeah, I don't really pay attention to like time things. Like my breakfast was a veggie burger and broccoli.
Well, and especially since I think, you know, breakfast food is good for any meal. I think conversely, any food is good for breakfast.
I just don't really get hung up on that kind of thing. That's why I get really mad when restaurants stop serving things at certain times.
Right.
It's like, I might want French toast whenever.
Right. I might want a burger for breakfast, so why not? Come on, McDonald's, step up.
Yeah. I mean, really, what's the difference between hash browns and French fries? Like, who gives a crap?
Right.
Oh, goodness. So, but, while you're enjoying your sparkling water... Do you even have it in a fancy cup, or are you doing, like, a solo cup?
It's straight out of the can. It's so... Yeah. I'm totally not classy at all this morning.
Yeah, not just through a straw, so... No. There's class need not apply to this
That's
podcast.
That's right. I am totally classless today.
And we both have our cats joining us, which is fantastic. Keiko's sound asleep.
Oberon is... running around the house, I think, at this point. He's kind of hyper.
No. He's still a little boy, though, isn't he?
He is.
But he's young.
He's just over 3 years old. And he's pretty... I think he's pretty small. He's only, like, around 10 pounds, so...
Yeah, it's funny, because the demon cat downstairs is so heavy compared to Keiko. When I pick him up, it's like picking up a baby. And she is like between like 5 and 6 pounds.
Oh.
And she's just hair. And she's getting her hair cut soon. I can't wait because it's just ridiculous. So these are fun times over here with cats.
Yes.
So if you could have cat superpowers, like if you could talk to the cats or transform into a cat, would you do that?
God, yeah. I think it'd be, well, I actually do talk to my cat and not just like I'll meow at him and he'll meow back in a similar way. But then I also just have conversations that I imagine are two-sided, but probably one-sided. Like he'll meow at me and I'll say, really? You think so? I don't know. What do you think? And he'll meow again. But I think it'd be cool to turn into a cat because he gets way more exercise than I do around the house. He's leaping all over the place right now. He likes to explore, and poor Keiko.
So she does. There's no exercise in her life at all, which is fine. She gets put in a buggy. People that know me have seen these pictures that Keiko has her own stroller. And she gets put in the stroller. And so when we go to the comic shop, she's in her buggy.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
Yeah. I wonder if understanding the cat just having that superpower would be great or would be awful. Like, could you imagine the insulting thoughts that cats must have about humans?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've said before that living with Oberon is like living with a kid version of me if I didn't have opposable thumbs and guilt. Because we are very similar in personality, but he doesn't have the sense of, this isn't mine, so I shouldn't knock it over and play with it, or, smashing a butter dish is fine, and then I'll just lick the butter. I don't know, like, what. And I know I totally anthropomorphize too, because I just imagine that dogs and cats have much deeper thoughts than they really do. But like when they're staring out the window, I just imagine that they're thinking of all sorts of deep things.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely think that Garfield is kind of plausible, because it's just, there's no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously they have brains and they have emotions and I think they have souls, but sometimes they just give you that look, like,
right.
You know, and so when I think of, there's some really good, like comic books, Hero Cats, one of the best comic books today. Hero Cats is phenomenal. And the different personalities of these cats is hilarious, because I've had so many different cats and they've been so unique.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know what Keiko's superpower would be if she could, like, turn into something else.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Guessing at this point, with her lack of leaping ability, she'd maybe want some kind of levitation or teleportation.
Yes, I could see.
I used to say that she could teleport, because I put her in the buggy one time and she was out of it, and I don't know how she got out of it. But then I figured out that it was the roof of the thing wasn't firmly... It isn't actually attached to the other part, so she actually slipped out of there. But she back was turned in a matter of seconds. And so I used to say that she could teleport. So I do think that maybe at this age, those would be the things that she'd want.
Yeah. I actually had a housemate in college who compared me to a cat on a number of occasions. Apparently I could walk so quietly that I would walk into a room and scare the hell out of her, because she didn't hear me coming. And we would be sitting in the living room watching TV, and I would suddenly remember something and jump up off the sofa and race up to my room and then race back downstairs and sit on the sofa again. She's like, oh, you're just like a cat. So maybe I think that's why I like animals in general, but I tend to prefer cats to dogs, at least in terms of owning.
Yeah. I've never owned a dog. They just seem like way too much work.
That's part of it too is I just know I don't have the patience and the mentality to train a dog.
Yeah.
It's just not, and I don't really have the personality to establish the dominance that a dog needs to be controlled. But with cats, whatever, you know, you just bring them in the house and show them where to go to the bathroom, and then they're good.
I suppose shape-shifting into a dog wouldn't be so bad if you lived in the right kind of place, because you could kind of go about your business and eavesdrop and people give you treats and, you know, like, there's some really dog-friendly cities.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think life as a dog is pretty sweet. And in fact, I think, was it on Cosmos? I think the new Cosmos, Neil deGrasse Tyson talked about how dogs, like wolves, kind of domesticated themselves, because they figured out that rather than competing with humans for food and shelter, that they could just get it if they hung out and protected them. If they went to the tribe and helped protect them and kept them company, then they could just get fed and have shelter.
seems very likely.
Yeah.
Cats had, you know, their own temples.
Right. And I also read somewhere that cats aren't really that domesticated. That dogs are bred, but cats just breed out. Like, the number one way that cats breed is outdoor cats just getting it on. And that even indoor cats, they're not really as domesticated as dogs are. Which I think you can kind of see in their independence and their apathy towards being trained.
Yeah, definitely true. Yeah, they. I at least in Keiko's personality, I think she's definitely more of the "you serve me" type
right.
of approach to felinedom.
Right. When I was living with my now ex-girlfriend, her dog, I mean, we were definitely referred to her as his mom, and he was her fur kid. But with Oberon, I think of us more as housemates than, you know, and I have a little more authority because I decide when he gets fed, and I can, you know, chastise him for doing stuff he's not supposed to do. But he doesn't really have the same ability to chastise me. But I don't think of it as like I'm his master. We just happen to like live in the same house and I feed him.
Yeah, that sounds good. You got a sort of like odd couple thing
yes,
going on.
Exactly.
Well, nice. Well, I know you always write bromance on your yeah. Instagram.
Yeah, bromance and soulmates are like two of the tags I use.
Yeah.
Because we did, like, I mean, he was sitting on me. He was sitting in my lap the first night that I brought him home. Within an hour or two, he was comfortable with me, and we just kind of had this instant bond. So it's definitely a bromance going on.
Cool. One of the things that I, you know, besides the fact that, Keiko is so much a part of my life, that I was thinking of talking to you about the cats, and because you are always Instagramming Oberon. Is we were talking about all this like speculative fiction and the fantasy genre and how popular things like werewolves and vampires and witches are, and it's like there's really not, at least not with television. Now maybe books are a different world,
mm-hmm.
but on television, I don't recall cats having a real supernatural presence like. No, there's no big franchise that centers around like a werecat. It's always
right.
werewolf.
The only thing I can think of is a few years ago on ABC Family, there was a show that was adapted from a YA fantasy series, The Nine Lives of Chloe King.
Oh, I do remember that.
And it was about this high school girl who finds out that she's a cat person, and there's this whole like. You know, secret world of cat people, and, you know, their nine lives and stuff like that. And it was actually, I mean, I wouldn't have expected this from ABC Family, although I think The Middleman was also on ABC Family, and that's one of the best shows ever. But it was really, I mean, it was really good, solid sort of urban fantasy. And sadly, it ended on a cliffhanger and didn't get picked up for a second season. So it was super frustrating. But yeah, for the most part, there's not a lot. I recently marathoned the first season of Bitten on Netflix with Laura Vandervoort, who played Supergirl on Smallville, as the only female werewolf in a world of werewolves in modern day Toronto and upstate New York. And I got really, really hooked on that. And they do a lot of really nice stuff where there will be a number of episodes where nobody turns into a wolf, but there's all the stuff about the pack. And she said that I saw she was at Comic-Con here in Kansas City a few weeks ago. And she said that just in terms of when they film, even as humans, she'll do stuff like avoid making eye contact with the alpha of their pack, and that they try to incorporate certain aspects of wolves in the way that they act as humans. And so it's really interesting. And that's also based on a series by Kelly Armstrong, Ooh, Oberon's going after a squirrel. Outside.
Heard that crash.
I mean, it was on my Netflix queue for a while, and then I talked to her at Comic-Con, and she was really pushing the show, and she's clearly very proud of it, which is always nice to see, when an actor actually likes what they're doing. And I went home and watched the first few episodes and was really hooked on it. And it's another one that sort of ends on a earth-shattering cliffhanger. And now I'm kind of pissed off. Now I'm mad at her. I'm shaking my fist at her. Thanks for getting me hooked on another show. Way to go.
But I noticed a lot of commercials for some other things, like The Originals. I think it's on the CW.
Right, yeah.
Show, really?
Yeah, actually it's funny because I said to when I met Laura Vandervoort at Comic-Con, I think at one point I said that when I was a kid I always thought werewolves were cooler than vampires, and she said, yeah, vampires are totally played out. I mean, it's true that I did. I mean, I was, when I was in elementary school, I was a huge reader of books on the paranormal, ghosts and haunted houses, vampires, werewolves, the original zombies. I actually do get sort of like weirdly pretentious and annoyed about the whole zombie phenomenon, because I'm like, those aren't zombies. Zombies are related to voodoo, and it's a specific thing. But yeah, like voodoo and voodoo zombies and Frankenstein's monster and mummies and all that stuff. I was a huge UFO sightings. If the X-Files had been on when I was a kid, I would have desperately wanted to be Fox Mulder when I grew up. I was into all that stuff. And I always thought werewolves were cooler than vampires. There was something sort of like vampires were, and it's funny now because we have all this stuff where vampires are heroes or anti-heroes. But to me, when I was a kid, and this was like pre-most, you know, I mean, this was pre-Anne Rice and pre... So vampires were clearly just monsters, whereas werewolves had this sort of tragic, could be heroic. Like it was always sort of the person who became a vampire became a werewolf didn't really want it, and it was a curse, and they were trying to do the best they could. Whereas it always seemed like vampires reveled in being vampires, and they were just pure evil.
Right. Yeah, we had different things, like the original Angel, which was called Forever Night.
Yes.
Angel is a complete ripoff. But there was also like Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Right. Oh God, great show.
There was you know, different kinds of supernatural stuff, and it all seemed a lot scarier.
Yeah.
Than like now, like except for Teen Wolf, where it was this like straight up comedy.
Okay.
But otherwise, like, the werewolf things I remember were, like you're saying, like, really emotional and stuff. Shit. Now I'm going to blank. Like, The Howling.
Right. Well, American Werewolf in London, I think, is a really good example of, I mean, they played up a lot of comic aspects, but it's also very much into the drama of him wrestling with the fact that he's become this monster. And he doesn't want it, and he kills, you know, and like the people that he kills keep coming back and visiting him and telling him that you need to kill yourself. And I mean, it's some pretty, pretty deep stuff compared to, I think, a lot of the, and even like the original Universal stuff. I mean, Dracula is just the straight up bad guy, but in The Wolfman, Lon Chaney Jr. is sort of agonizing over being a werewolf, and it's not something that he wanted, and it's, you know, a burden and something that he wrestles with, in the same way that I think Frankenstein's monster was also really tragic, that the, you know, in like the Universal, not just the book, but in the, well, maybe in the book as well, that the villain is Victor Frankenstein, and really sort of the tragic hero is the monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you tell your librarian because you're saying Frankenstein's monster.
Yes, I know.
But, yeah, one of the things that comes to my mind when I think about the differences that in how things are portrayed with vampires and werewolves and witches. It's the attractiveness level. Like when we when you get your RPG sheet out for your character sheet or something like that, and even in like Comic Vine, which is one of my favorite resources for comic book stuff, mm-hmm. they'll have a list of character traits, right. and attractiveness yeah. is one of the traits that's measured, and people argue whether or not that's necessary. But there's something about comparing the sexy vampire who could be the most horrible horror monster, but he's got to be hot, or she,
right?
You know, they have to be attractive, and they do that a lot with any of the versions of the devil. It's yes. hardly ever an ugly thing. You know, Buffy did great with the Master in the first season. The Master was like a hideous bat-looking
right.
monster
with fruit punch mouth.
Yeah, right. But then you also had Angel and Spike, who were hot.
Right.
You know, so it was like, eh. I didn't feel like they kept enough.
Now that you mention it, I can see that vampires, like the whole sexy vampire thing, became really big around the same time that it was kind of trendy for men to be metrosexual. Whereas I'm kind of surprised now that we're not seeing more werewolf stuff with the rise of the sort of lumbersexual, you know, women really digging the hairy guys with the in the flannel. So we should be seeing more werewolf stuff now, I think.
Yeah, it's probably happening in those worlds of the internet that I never even heard of.
The dark corners of the internet where people are writing, you know,
their fan fiction.
The same place where people are writing the gay were dolphin.
Yeah, exactly. Thing. The dinosaur erotica.
Yes.
No, I'm not, and I swear to God, I'm not knocking it. If you pull something off like that, and you
I think it's really great. Shit. Yeah,
you get all the bonus points ever for completing a project. I don't care what your premise is, but yeah, when like the posts of like the dinosaur erotica start showing up on Twitter, and the woman in love with her horse cover that people were making fun of
right.
a few days ago, but I mean like. Yeah, so I guarantee there's parts of the internet that are already talking about lumbersexual werewolves.
Yeah.
You know,
and of course, it'll take Hollywood a while to catch up to that. By the time they do, no one's going to care anymore.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I like flannel. I'm okay with that. You know, especially like even like with True Blood, they had some guys that could pull off the scruffiness right away, but their chests were always bare.
Right.
No hair on their arms, no hair on their chests.
Yeah, noticed that. Actually, that was I was watching there's the episode of Buffy where Oz comes back after having left. Oz cheats on Willow while he's a werewolf with another werewolf and leaves to sort of try and get control over his werewolf side. And then once Tara's hooked up with, or Willow's hooked up with Tara, which that is totally my OTP. And then Oz comes back and he gets captured by the Initiative and he's being tortured. And I noticed that like Seth Green had no chest or armpit hair in the scene where he's being shot. And I'm like, that's really weird. Cause I'm pretty sure Seth Green, it has hair. I mean, like, yeah. why do they do this?
Like Joe Manganiello, however you say his name.
Right.
Like, you can't tell me that dude doesn't have chest hair.
Right. I'm pretty sure he probably, I mean, just judging from what he looks like and his heritage, if he doesn't have back hair naturally, he will soon. And not that there's anything wrong with that. Just, you know. But yeah, so to have him have a waxed chest is pretty weird.
And how do you feel about the portrayal of witches? Since you brought up Tara, who I adored,
yeah.
of course, from Buffy. But I'm also a big fan of Bewitched, and you know, think that Samantha on Bewitched is fabulous.
Oh yeah, she was. I think like there's a general comparison of Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie, and there's always like there's sort of two camps of which one you like more, and I think that says a lot about how you view gender and sexism, because Jeannie was like super subservient, and she, you know, she got into trouble, but it was always sort of breaking the rules a little bit and then apologizing, whereas Sam was just straight, like, Samantha was clearly the dominant one in the household, and she was strong-willed and she was smart, and yeah, Bewitched was great.
Yeah, that's always my favorite. Obviously, when we get around times with Halloween, there's so much more of the ugly green skin, big warts, and you know,
hocus pocus sort of.
Yeah, like a hocus pocus type. But I mean, the Wizard of Oz cackling bitch, and it's I realize, I mean, if you see old women in Europe, that yes, they look like
that. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, thinking back over my Russian Jewish grandmother and great aunts. Yeah, I can totally see where you'd get the image of the witch as this.
Yeah, the Baba Yaga in her weird cottage on chicken legs.
Yes.
With the babushka in her head. And I never understood the weird pedestal thing. She doesn't ride a broom. She has like this weird thing that looks like a butter churning device that she hops and flies.
Russia's weird. I think we just have to chalk it up to Russia's weird.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have our different types of witches. Like, you don't, like, those witches have no sexual being at all. And then you've got, like, the smoking hot witches.
You've got the, Bewitched and, what is it, Bell Book and Candle and...
Well, American Horror Story had a whole series. I mean,
right.
What's-Her-Face was a... I can't believe I'm blanking on her. I don't watch the show because it just looks too scary for me.
Yeah, but, I think it just occurred to me that it's funny that you and I are having this conversation on monsters while neither of us watches horror movies because they scare us too much.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I'm okay with being a wuss about it. But I like funny things like Shaun of the Dead, like, you know,
right.
iZombie. I'm okay with iZombie, but I will not watch The Walking Dead.
Well, there's a whole other, for me, it's not even a scary thing with The Walking Dead. It's just, it's so utterly bleak. I mean,
and
it's even like the writer is on record as saying that the title doesn't refer to the zombies. It refers to the humans, that they're the Walking Dead because they're dead inside. And I actually don't believe that a zombie apocalypse is possible. Let's be realistic. But if it happened, I would probably off myself because I would not want to live in that kind of world.
But I do think that there's enough fear of all of the things that we see with werewolves and vampires and zombies. I think the one that we relate to most is the zombies because of disease and biological warfare.
Oh, yeah.
I think the zombie lore closest. Resembles that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like with iZombie, I watch it because it's kind of funny and cute, but she's smoking hot, this girl.
Right.
Like, ridiculously hot. And it's like, you're a zombie? What? What? No.
Right. Well, and I think that along with Buffy, that you're using the supernatural stuff as metaphors for real things that people deal with, and I think probably both in iZombie and in Buffy specifically, what women deal with in our society, and so I think that can be really effective. And same with Bitten, with the werewolf show, that she's the only woman who's a werewolf, and because of that, there's all this attention brought on her. But it's it's not all sort of supernatural stuff. A lot of it has to do with she was sexually abused as a child, and the guy who abused her gets out of jail, and I'm totally spoiling here, but he gets turned into a werewolf, and there's a psychopathic killer who gets turned into a werewolf, and there's all this stuff with there's a lot of stuff that sort of ties in with things that women deal with in our society. And I think that, you know, Joss Whedon was very bluntly trying to do that with Buffy, and I think iZombie is probably doing that as well, especially considering how closely Rob Thomas has made it to Veronica Mars. So yeah, I think that, and that's a good aspect of monsters that I think probably is what attracts you and me to them more than obviously more than the horror aspect, because we're not into that, but more of the supernatural as you can relate to it just as a human being.
Yeah, but again, that's one of exactly what you said. I couldn't watch The Walking Dead because of the gore, because it is more horror like. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not a comedy. Anyway.
Oh, God, no. Unless it's like the blackest comedy ever. Like, if Samuel Beckett wrote horror comedy, then it would be Walking Dead.
Yeah, I mean, if Simon Pegg or Steve Zahn suddenly run through the frame, then maybe I can sit through an episode. But it is, it's always been about the human experience and how quickly we turn on people. And there's a comic book that's not based on monsters that I was talking about recently called Sheltered. And it's a 15-issue series. And it's about these kids that are, they're in that survivalist, they're raised as survivalist kids. Okay. Like, their parents have them in this compound of trailers. And they're, stocking up all their weaponry and their food rations and stuff like that. So these kids don't really know anything else. And so they realize that they're expecting the world to end, that there's a natural cataclysm going to happen and the world's going to end. And as they know it, so they're trying to prepare.
Right.
And it's about how the kids turn on each other. And it's very natural.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't really need to think the world is going to end all the time. It could be our own world that day ending,
right.
If it's, something happens at your job, or something happens at college, or something happens to your kid. All of us, I think, have that relatability. And then it does get turned into a lot of times these monster things, like The Walking Dead. It's like, who's friend, who's foe,
right.
Who has resources. I know I'd be up Schitt's Creek. I'd be like you. I'd put a bullet in myself.
Right.
Like, it would be fast and over in a matter of seconds. My cat could eat off my body. I don't care. It's one of those things where I know I have no valuable skills if there's an apocalypse.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny that you said, the librarian talking about that I've often said, I don't know how to do any kind of car maintenance. I can cook. That's about the only practical thing that I know. Apocalypse came, really all I could do would be to talk about, the metafictional elements in the short stories of Jorge Luis Borges, or I could talk about Doctor Who trivia, and nobody's going to care. So what use am I?
Yeah, I was thinking recently, I'm like, okay, well, I could probably be like the one girl in this comic book Sheltered, whose mom was a doctor or a nurse or something like that. So she learned a couple things, but I mean, she's a kid. She's has no education really as far as college or anything goes. But she became the medic of this compound.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, I could probably maybe learn something like that.
Right.
But I don't know enough about plant life to be a great medicine woman or anything like that.
Right. I think, I don't know if you've read the novel Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. I hope I'm not sure how to, sorry, Emily, if I'm mangling your name. It's a fantastic novel about this flu that just suddenly springs up and wipes out most of humanity and civilization. And it jumps around it. And I would never think that a post-apocalyptic novel could be so beautiful while also being terrifying at moments and bleak at moments. But it jumps around in time through before the apocalypse, during it, and after. And it really just sort of gets on how people can touch other people's lives and continue to do that even after they've died. But one of the main centers of the novel is this: after the apocalypse, there's this group of traveling players who go around the Midwest performing Shakespeare for people to try and keep our culture alive. I could totally do something like that. And even though in general. Yeah. I'm a pacifist, and I'm not big on guns. I can learn how to shoot a gun and defend people, and
I can do that. That's, so, you know, but I don't have sniper skills. Like, I can't, you know, right. I don't know how to hunt. So, like, shooting is limited. Like, I know how to kill something, but I don't know how to butcher something.
Right.
So I'm, like, only half useful when it comes to
Yeah, exactly.
I cannot put food on your table. Like, I can't farm. You know, but like you said, I could cook. I could cook once somebody else figures out how to get the stuff.
Get the food to me. I can totally make a great meal, and then I'll tell you a story of the before times.
But you're like the librarian, like the Noah Wiley.
I just watched one of those movies last night, and they are so much fun.
They are.
So clearly ripping off Raiders of the Lost Ark, but in all the best ways, and they do it with a cheeky grin.
Yeah. And they look like, you know, like they know it. They're having a blast. I love the people that created it.
Yeah.
And, you know, same folks from Leverage.
Right.
So, yeah. And the actors are on Twitter, and they really just seem like they're enjoying it. Like you were talking about Vandervoort, how she seems to enjoy the show.
Yeah. One of the things I love about the internet is that you can see, like, the cast of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. adore each other. And have so much, you know, they post clips of themselves goofing off, and it's so delightful to see stuff like that. And to know that, like, a show that you're watching, that the cast really, really get along well. Stephen Amell was at Comic-Con for one day.
It's fantastic.
And he's such a good guy. They actually had, like, the studio had tried to schedule him out of the con. I don't think like on purpose, but they ended up double booking him, and they pretty much said, you're not going to be able to go. And he said, I made this commitment. I'm not disappointing my fans. I'm going anyway. And he like ran himself ragged going from filming in Vancouver to going to LA to do the Paley Institute panel with the Arrow and Flash cast, and then make his way to Kansas City to be at this convention for one, not even the whole day. But in his Q&A, he talked about how when they're filming that, John Barrowman, of course, ridiculously cracks everyone up.
Yeah,
and that Paul Blackthorne is a very serious actor, and he's frequently like, I think like he gives them death glares when they're all cracking up over Barrowman.
I love Paul Blackthorne.
Yeah.
Oh, he's still in my heart.
There's just a lot of, it is really great to see, especially for like shows that can get kind of darkly dramatic, like Arrow can, or Bitten, you know, where there's some humor, but it's mostly a lot of people angsting and getting beaten down and fighting back. And so it's nice to know that behind the scenes, they're all having a ball.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, so speaking of superheroes, we're talking about all this monster folklore, and of course, our American folklore, not talking about the Native American folklore, obviously, but our modern folklore is all about superheroes and comics. Like, it's like that's our monster manual is, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So there's obviously hugely popular on TV and film, and and some, you know, some good games that are out there and stuff. You know, so I was thinking about all these monsters and stuff. And I'm like, you know, other than the Tolkien stuff recently, I haven't really seen any elves in very much stuff. But people reminded me that Dragon Age which is a juggernaut.
Right, yeah.
You know, they used to call it World of Warcraft.
Right. One of my friends was just telling me about playing Dragon Age and all of the NPCs that your character can romance.
I've heard that it is so romantic, and it's one of these things where when I read my friends' posts, I'm enamored by this. I'm like, okay, what kind of like mushy video game is this that has like these romance storylines?
And this is amazing that like when you see people talking about Dragon Age, that's what they talk about.
Yeah,
they're not really talking about the adventure stuff, or they talk about romancing the NPCs in this game.
And it's really, really important to these players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't notice it because people, obviously, like we go through this with comics too, people ask for stuff you know, at a fan level and say, oh, I really want this, I want this, I want this. And it takes somebody with the skill of to be the creator to answer that call,
right.
You know, like, you know, with G. Willow Wilson and Ms. Marvel. Like, it's not that nobody ever asked for a character like her before, but it took the right person to take on that challenge. And I guess, and with video games, I mean, it's like, Jesus, I mean, if you think comics have a big team of people to put out an issue.
Right, right.
Yeah, the amount of team and money that must go into a game, that's the rendering capacity of something as incredible as Dragon Age. But that's what my friends talk about. They talk about being in love with these characters.
Mm-hmm. And just the fact that the video game companies now are hiring professional authors to write their games, and they're hiring, you know, pretty often like top, maybe not A-list, but I mean, like George Clooney isn't doing voices for video games. But
okay, they get a sweet voice actor.
But so. Yeah, but they get Katie Sackhoff and Will Wheaton and I can't even think of like, I mean, they get like all these actors and they, I mean, it's kind of, it's really sort of heartening to see that they take this really seriously. And they don't just want to make a game that, you know, like you're bored and you don't really have a lot to do, so you're going to play Duck Hunt for half an hour. Not to denigrate that, because there are times when that's all I want. You know, I do have a half hour to kill and I just want to blow off some steam and you know, see pretty colors and flashing lights. But they also make these really intricate games.
Well, I think from the appeal that an actor might see, besides the money, is, you know, if you go to a movie, it's over in 2 hours.
Right.
You know, I mean, some people get the big franchise deal like Iron Man and Avengers and stuff like that. Some, you know, once in a blue moon, an actor can look forward to something like that, but that's not common. But with a video game, people are putting in hundreds of hours.
Yeah. Since I was 7 years old, I've been a huge Star Wars fan. But to be perfectly honest, I've gotten more enjoyment out of playing Lego Star Wars than watching any of the Star Wars movies. And I think part of that is it has the imagination of the Star Wars movies, but also you get to play in it and you know, you can go around and like you have these characters that interact with each other. And it's not like a complex story or anything like that. It's basically following the Star Wars movie, but like Princess Leia tends to have a bigger part to play in the Lego Star Wars games than in the movies. And there's just something that's really endearing and that I could attach myself to and that it resonated with me. In the games, playing in that, and yeah, you spend more time, you get, and in that time, you get invested in it.
Yeah, that's why I can see why Dragon Age is so appealing to those people. I would love to see something like that, though, with a lot more elf lore actually be, you know, workable on the,
like,
the small,
like traditional more, fairy lore, or
yeah, like I really would be cool with that if it was on a TV series, because, you know, like you said, a movie is done and it's over in a couple hours.
Right.
Except for the Tolkien movies. I mean, fine, they're like, you know, hours and hours and hours, but it's still just one thing. Whereas I get a lot of enjoyment out of a good TV series.
And in all honesty, I mean, there are, you know, there are a bunch of movies that I think are really good, but these days I think TV is much more progressive and experimental. And even like terms of like quality of building storylines and building characters, but also more roles for women of all ages, more roles for people of color of all ages, and, you know, people of various sexual orientations and what I mean, and just even addressing issues that movies are just not touching these days. I think the movie studios have gotten so scared of what they're doing, you know, like I think in the 70s we had all the really pushing boundaries of movies, and they've totally gotten away from that, but they're doing it in TV, and so I think it's really exciting now what stuff we're seeing in TV. So yeah, I would love to see more urban fantasy fairy stuff on TV. I think Lost Girl is about the only one I can think of that comes close to that.
Yeah, and they didn't really do like the pointy-eared elf
right.
creatures.
Maybe Once Upon a Time, but...
Yeah, maybe.
That's a bit iffy.
Yeah, that's...
No offense to you fans of Once Upon a Time, but I gave up on that.
I gave up on it, too. I just am really addicted to the costumes. So if I turn it on, I'm not even paying attention anymore. I'm looking at the costumes. Yeah. I have a Pinterest just for Eduardo Castro costumes. Because when I get famous, that's what I want to wear to a book signing. So you heard it here.
I approve of this. Yeah.
So before I let you go, let's get in a couple more things. I know besides elves, one of the other things that I'd like to see is I really hate to add to the, oh, it has to be darker and grittier bullshit, mm-hmm. because the thing does need to be darker and grittier. But if there was like a live-action Scooby that wasn't as cheesy as what Scooby really is, you know, like Supernatural is like horror to me. Like,
right.
There's no, you don't know if things are butts. Supernatural is horror.
Right.
So if there was something in between, like I guess Goosebumps maybe had something like that, but I never watched it.
Yeah.
It was at the in-between time where I didn't care.
Well, the interesting thing about Scooby-Doo that I didn't realize until I think I was reading somewhere is that Scooby-Doo is, I mean, the setup of the original cartoon, it's both very scientific and very pro-youth. In that it's these teenagers who investigate these mysteries that appear to be supernatural, and the adults never listen to them or believe them. And there's always a rational explanation for everything that's going on that they can prove scientifically. And that's actually a pretty cool thing. And if we could have a live action show that had that for young people, that was, you know, engaging and
right. Like Buffy had the teenagers and everything too, and Supernatural, they started off, they were kind of young too.
Right.
But all of the monsters were real.
Right.
So I think it would be cool to have a Scooby that people could relate to where it was debunking. Like if the Mythbusters were going.
Right.
If it was fictional Mythbusters. I don't know.
And actually, when I was in college, I had this idea for a comic book miniseries, was the original idea of that was basically Scooby-Doo with the serial numbers filed off, but it was set in the 70s, but it was very, not necessarily gritty, but just very grounded in the 70s. Like there would be one issue where they're in New York and it has to do with Studio 64 and rampant cocaine use and disco. And there would be one issue where they're in San Francisco and dealing with like Satanists, but it would also involve like the politics of the LGBT stuff that was going on at the time. And
crime dramas. It sounds like real, I don't know that it was Dragnet, but I do remember some old 70s crime dramas that, because of the drug use, like there was always, and they always made these, you know, these kids, they would always be like 25-year-olds playing 17-year-olds.
Right.
And they would always be like on the worst trip of all time.
Right. I think that probably the apotheosis of that is the infamous Quincy episode with punk rock, where like kids are dying because they're slam dancing or whatever, you know, and it's all about how like terrible, how the punk scene is ruining our children and turning them into anti-authoritarian losers who are going to get killed. Very sad.
So what is it? You have a daughter who's young, but she's a young woman.
Yeah. She's 18 healthy. Now. She's graduating from high school very soon.
So what is it that the kids like these days? Do they like, I mean, there's obviously, like I said, so much vampire stuff.
Right.
Vampire diaries,
she's really into Supernatural. She's not really into Teen Wolf, but Teen Wolf is definitely on her radar. And there's a lot of YA fantasy and particularly, I think, urban fantasy stuff, that is very popular. Trying to think of other stuff that a lot of it is stuff that's not on the cultural radar of most adults, I think. Rooster Teeth is this group of people in, I think, Texas who produce, they do a whole, I mean, they've got like a whole YouTube channel of various shows that they do. Rage Quit, I think, where they play video games and rage quit them. But they actually, they've got a series that they did that's an anime series called Ruby that my daughter got me into that's really good. They have another animated series that's sort of more traditionally American animated that's superhero called X-Ray and Vav that's hilarious. And she's really into, like, I think a lot of teens now are watching YouTube channels and independently produced, Hannah Hart, My Drunk Kitchen, really big, which is changing. I mean, there's all this media going on that Hollywood is totally blind to, and the studio execs do not understand at all.
Because the studio execs are a bunch of...
I mean, Stephen Amell talked about at his Q&A, he's seriously proposed that they should have, like at a con, they should have the Arrow cast and the Supernatural cast read fanfic, like mash up Supernatural Arrow fanfic. And he wasn't kidding. Like, he meant this honestly, like not making fun of fanfic, but like really talking about how it's cool that fans are into this stuff. And he said, yeah, they don't understand. Like, when I propose this to them, they don't even understand what I'm talking about or how we would do it. And so I think, you know, this whole, it's really kind of this alternative shadow media that adults, which, you know, we are adults, but that a lot of them just don't get at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, certain people who embrace technology, you mentioned Rob Thomas before because of iZombie, but his partner, Chris Roberson, who created iZombie, he's also the founder of Monkey Brain Comics, which is for online comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, certain people get it, and they're
right.
interested. And so they're not interested in it just as an investment. Like, they're interested in being a part of it.
Right. And, so, and they understand, you know, what the kids are hep to these days.
That's why I ask you, because I don't know what the kids are. I don't talk to kids. You're like, you know, once a week I podcast or whatever. It's like, that's my human contact.
Yeah, and I mean, it is kind of telling that, I think last week this 13-year-old girl came in and was checking out some books, and I was really excited about what she was checking out. That's way more. I am totally a 13-year-old girl at heart. make of that what you will. But
it's so cool.
So
I would fucking trade stickers with you, man.
Yes.
Absolutely. I give you some unicorn stickers.
But I will not call myself a brony. I'm not going to, you know, try to co-opt.
Co-opt girl stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, but, you know, but there is room in other things.
Yes.
Which is cool. And then, like, you know, like these franchises that we've been talking about seem to have that balance. You know, like Grimm and Sleepy Hollow and Supernatural. Well, Supernatural is kind of bro heavy, but it's as appealing to.
But it's popular with a lot of women.
It's appealing to the female families,
yeah.
Because it's a bunch of hot guys. But
it's a bunch of hot guys angsting, and women seem to dig that. They like
they
like the broody bad boys.
They do, at least from a distance. And then once you get them, you're just like, oh, go away.
I think it's sort of it's the female version of the manic pixie girl. That yeah. Guys like seeing stories about the manic pixie girl, but you wouldn't really want to date one.
Exactly, because there's. Level there.
And let's face it, you wouldn't really want to date Dean Winchester.
No. But you would make beautiful babies.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually this should make you happy since you mentioned like Monster Manual. Another thing the kids are into these days, my daughter and her friends are starting up a Pathfinder group. They're going to be playing, you know, D&D basically.
Because I've heard that the comic book has done pretty well. So I know it's based on the game,
right.
but yeah, I think Dynamite's doing the comic book.
I think that sounds right.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. And I absolutely fail. I have never read Skull Kickers. I realize it's a big failure. I love Jim Zub for his business sense, and he seems like an awesome mentor kind of person that we turn to comics. And I suck that I've never read Skull
Kickers. I have not either. I'm sadly really out of like a lot of like what's going on with comics today.
Yeah, you have other things going on too. So before I let you go, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because I watched this morning, the Knights of Badassdom, which is hilarious.
Yes.
You know, it's got that Shaun of the Dead comedic dark thing going on. So it's not actually mocking LARPers. It's funny, but serious at the same time.
Right.
So, knowing how quickly everybody is to blame something else for somebody's behaviors, we've seen, you know, lawsuits, like huge, like federal cases, lawsuits against heavy metal. Judas Priest had like probably the landmark case. Then books being banned.
Right.
Everything, like,
the whole persecution of D&D or attempted persecution of it.
Like D&D has gone through its share, and Harry Potter gets, you know, its own accusations and stuff. So, because you're a librarian, so you work with the public all the time, and you're a nerd, and you're a parent, I was wondering if you would share what you see as like what's healthy about fantasy, and if there's anything unhealthy about fantasy as a genre.
I think that, you know, as someone who's read a lot of fantasy since I was, I mean, I can't even remember when I wasn't. I can't remember a time when I wasn't reading. And you know, that my daughter has grown up reading it as well. I think it definitely helps encourage imagination. In terms of fandom stuff, that it encourages friendships and bonding among people who are into that. And like we were talking about, the whole metaphors for the human condition. Especially like slipping that in to younger people who might not know that that's what they're getting, until they grow up. I think the dark side is, I think a lot of fantasy, especially when it gets stuck in a rut of like heroic or even sort of gritty fantasy, but it's very much rooted in a northern Western European model, it can be kind of reactionary and regressive socially. I like watching Game of Thrones, but if you're going to create a fantasy world, why would you create one where women are treated so horribly unless you're specifically addressing issues about women being treated horribly, you know?
Yeah, that's why I didn't last more than 10 minutes trying to watch it.
Yeah, one of my best friends pretty much gave up because of, you know, yes, there's both male and female nudity, but clearly it's weighted towards female nudity in Game of Thrones. And there's just a lot of social and physical violence towards women. And unless you're directly, and I think that sometimes George R. R. Martin is trying to like say something about the way women are treated in society, but I don't really think you need to take everything from, you know, like to say, well, it's historically realistic. Well, but we're talking about fantasy. And so why wouldn't you create a fantasy world where women are socially equal to men, and where, to use, I think, the author Scott Lynch, why you couldn't have, because he had a novel where there's a single mother woman of color who's a pirate captain, and his whole thing was, why wouldn't I create a character like that? It's a fantasy, you know, and so you can have any characters you want. Why not have that kind of fantasy? Why are the fantasies just white men having adventures?
I think you bring up a really important issue where people might tend to confuse fantasy with historical fiction.
Right. And,
you know, we're not talking about stories based on kings and queens like The White Queen. I don't know if you saw that series or read those books.
No.
I did really like the series, and they barely brought anything supernatural into it. They did have a little bit, but not, it was not much. Like, it wasn't drastically unbelievable. It was more about the roses. So, and the rise of the Tudor family.
Okay.
And I think people tend to confuse that. Like, I remember reading, like, The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings, and it didn't dawn on me until somebody said it years later, you know, why are there no girls on these adventures?
Right.
Why are there no, you know, why are all hobbits the same color? Like, would they, like, when I look at things like the D&D elves, I know that there's different types of elves.
Mm-hmm.
So, the Tolkien elves have different races, and there's the really pale blonde ones, and then there's the darker ones, and then there's some intermixing of the races, right, or whatever. But they all have the same color skin, is what it boils down to.
Right. Right.
So it's, you know, like, if hair color is your distinctive trait, right, like, what is that? you know, and it was something that it was just so ingrained in me to expect that and not expect more, that I didn't even notice it as a reader or a viewer of the shows until somebody else pointed it out.
Right. I think a good example of that is comparing Game of Thrones to the CW show Reign, which is, I mean, Reign is pretty solid young adult soap opera for the most part, but it's about Mary Queen of Scots in France, and it, you know, it's super ahistorical, but it's rooted in historical fiction. And I feel like, as opposed to the fantasy world of Game of Thrones, the women in Reign generally have more agency and more direct sort of power and strength than a lot of the women. I mean, you know, there's Daenerys, the Queen of Dragons, and
that's the only
Arya
one
Stark. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like in general I see stronger women in Reign than I do in Game of Thrones.
That's an interesting observation.
Maybe that's just me, but
I mean, I just hear too many things criticizing Game of Thrones. It's just so filled with rape that I just don't need it. Like, I just don't need that in my entertainment, unless it actually means something to the story.
Right.
If it, swear to God, you can't get through that story without that, then fine. But if you're throwing it in there because you're like, well, that's just how women were treated, then, you know, fuck you. It's a fantasy world.
Right. Exactly.
I think that is a big point to bring up about what's healthy and unhealthy about fantasy.
And I think general points about realistic, and I'm using finger quotes right now, because I really hate when people say, well, but that's realistic. Because, again, like, it's fiction. It doesn't have to be realistic. And I think different people have different ideas of what's realistic. And a lot of times people try to sell sort of dark, gritty, cynical stuff as, well, that's realistic. And I don't necessarily think it is.
I think a great comparison would be looking back at Excalibur, which is, like, all sorts of cheesy goodness.
Right.
And Helen Mirren is breathtaking.
Uh-huh.
And comparing that to the more modern version that was told, called King Arthur, starring, what was his name?
Were they digitally buffed up Keira Knightley's chest for the movie posters?
Yeah, or she was really pissed about that.
Yeah, right, and but rightly, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, starring Keira Knightley. I mean, they based much more research and history in one versus the other, which was based on a book,
mm-hmm.
based on a fantasy, you know, passed down through the ages, you know,
right.
story. And story is good. It doesn't have to be realistic, but I think there's a presumption that certain things are historically accurate when they're not.
Right. Or that you can throw what? Stuff in and distance yourself by saying it's realistic.
Yeah. Like the Bible. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, I tend to believe that some of those people existed. Some of the stories might have happened, kind of, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But let's face it written well after any of those people were breathing.
Right.
You know, so if there were great fictional works of, you know, if ye old Bill Clinton, probably have him in shining armor on a white horse.
Right.
And, you know, And that's what we would get.
Well, and actually that, wow, that's a really fascinating, because if you want to talk about realistic, then it's, I think, utterly realistic for your story to have a woman who is sexually and socially taken advantage of, Monica Lewinsky, and then, what, 10 years later, comes back with all this power and agency. That's realistic. So hey, authors who are, like, having your women beaten down, it's realistic to have women who are strong. And strong doesn't necessarily mean, like, right there, like, kicking ass, you know, by fighting. Sometimes strong is just surviving.
Absolutely. That's, you know, one of my favorite comics was Night of a Thousand Wolves. And it was only 3 issues. It was a real short comic. Mm-hmm. Brilliantly told. And that's partially why. Like, it took a woman to stand up to, you know, this big, they weren't werewolves, big monstrous wolves, and a big wolf goddess that was about to, you know, destroy the people.
Okay.
And it took a woman to stand up and say, you know, no, you're not gonna touch my family.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't any sort of kick-ass way. Like, there was no, you know, like, the men were all about fighting and swords and stuff, but it took a woman to just be like, no, that's not how we're going to handle it.
And similarly, you could have a story where a man does that and does it without fighting. Why don't we? And I wrote a blog post about this recently, that why can't we have more stories where boys and men are heroes, but they're heroes by being bookish and kind and compassionate, you know, and traits that are frequently seen as feminine in a negative way.
And I think that's why a lot of people ended up loving Neville Longbottom from the Harry Potter universe.
Oh, that's a great example. Yeah.
You know, he was a, like, tertiary character. And Neville just really rocked out by the end of the whole series.
Yep.
And, you know, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of if you can have a character who's insecure and bumbling to a certain extent, but also clearly really smart and really caring and courageous, but not in necessarily traditionally heroic way, but he can still be a breakout character who's seen as incredibly heroic.
Cool. Well, before I let you go, Josh, do you have specific recommendations that you want to turn people on to or anything? I know we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm trying to think of, like, anything that I've... Well, yeah. Okay. The author, Catherine Valente, has a juvenile series. The first one is The Girl Who Circumnavigated Fairyland in a Boat of Her Own Making, or Ship of Her Own Making. And there are 3 books total, and then she's just come out with a 4th book that's called it's all The Girl Who Fairyland, blah blah blah. Very long titles. And the 4th book is The Boy Who Lost Fairyland, and it's and that was actually what sparked my blog post about why, because he's a boy who's bookish and insecure and not necessarily a fighter. And she said that, you know, she want, like, why can't we have more stories with both boy and girl heroes who aren't, you know, I mean, she didn't come out and say this, but who aren't Buffy Summers. And it's an amazing series. Sort of a combination of traditional fairy tale mixed with Lewis Carroll and just sort of general kind of surrealism and high imagination, but with also an incredible amount of heart and really profound, especially for juvenile books, profound things to say about getting older and losing touch with some stuff from childhood, and also learning some dark lessons about death and birth, but also beautiful and whimsical, and I really can't say enough good things about those books, and that's my big recommendation this time around.
Cool. Well, I have failed to keep up with the series, but we were talking about Tara and Buffy. Amber Benson is an amazing writer.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a couple different series.
Yeah, I just read her new book, The Witches of Echo Park.
Oh, okay, so that was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
I read Death's Daughter, and I found Death's Daughter to be pretty interesting. I got a little confused at times, but I really did like it, and I expect someday, maybe before I die, I'll get to the rest of the series. But The Witches of Echo Park, I know, is her newest. Mm-hmm. So how is it?
I really liked it. I feel like because she's come out of acting and because I know her mostly from TV, I almost sort of expected that it would have kind of a TV show pacing, and it doesn't. It has a very literary pacing that I was like halfway through the book when I realized I still didn't know who the witches were, like what the big threat was, who the big bad was or anything like that. And I didn't care because it was taking its time getting us to know the characters and to really look at their lives. And I was so engrossed in that, that I was like, wait a minute, I don't even know who, like, and then it gets to the end and like all the stuff starts happening and it ends on a pretty big cliffhanger. It's very nicely done, sort of solid urban fantasy without giving into too many cliches. And I think, like, if there are cliches there, she plays them really well, as John Rogers of Leverage and The Librarians has said, tropes are tools to be used. they're there, you know, they've survived the test of time for a reason. And Amber Benson is definitely in that camp.
And she's delightful, and if you get to see her at a Comic-Con panel, please do.
Oh, my God. You have no idea how badly I want to meet her. I think she's, like, amazing.
Yeah, and she's, I mean, she's, you know, not only acted and written novels, but she's, you know, she's written her own movies and directed, directed screenplays. She's literally, like, done everything.
If you have a chance to see the movie, anyone out there, if you're listening, if you have the chance to see the movie Drones, it's hilarious. She and Adam Bush did that together, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I really wanted to see that.
On Netflix for a while, and then it went off Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And
well,
I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to catch it because it did look really good. Josh, thanks for your time. Where can people find you? And I know your blog. You've been writing more. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually was going to do Camp NaNoWriMo this month, and just a few days in, I dropped out because I wanted to focus more on getting poetry and short fiction written and up on my blog. So yeah, it was like I don't want to write this, but I want to write this. So my blog is www.goblin-cartoons.com. I'm on Twitter a lot, at Joshua M. Neff. Those are the main places you can find me.
Awesome.
And thank you for having me. This is always so much fun.
I love having you on because it's not that we never have a goal, because we do, you know, as far as what we're going to talk about, but I enjoy talking to you, and I think I have a great time, and I hope the listeners all think it's a great time.
Yeah. I hope we haven't bored anyone by us just going off and geeking out, but
yeah, we will geek out, and we do talk about our cats.
Yes.
Just gonna, and this is life. This is, you know, you got to get joy wherever you can.
Oh God, absolutely.
So, that's kind of the deal. So Josh, I hope people check out your recommendations and your poetry and blog posts and everything.
Thank you.
And you guys can, of course, follow me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter. You can sponsor the show at patreon.com/AmberUnmasked. Everything else is at AmberUnmasked.com. Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.